Well, good evening and welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse. 29 years ago, a movie came out, not burst onto the scene. It just came out, and it was largely ignored. And 29 years later, it's become a cult classic. Every Christmas, it plays for 24 hours on cable TV. It's been on lists of both beloved and reviled holiday movies, and it's been said you either love it or you hate it. Well, you can now see it in a completely different light. The movie, of course, is A Christmas Story, as you might have recognized from the music at the beginning. And now you can see it as a full-length stage play written by Philip Grecian. It begins November 28th on the Act One main stage at DeSales University. I'm Steve Aronson, and along with my co-host Rosalie Viscomi, we are honored to welcome Stephen Dennis, Associate Professor of Theater at DeSales University and Director of A Christmas Story, and John Bell, Producer and Head of the Division of Performing Arts at DeSales. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Steve.
Good to be here.
First thing I want to talk about very briefly is the season at DeSales. Arsenic and Old Lace have already been performed. A Tale of Two Cities is coming in February, and Chicago is coming next April. We'll talk a little bit about more about that later. Well, what I want to ask is, how was A Christmas Story selected to be part of this eclectic season? John or Stephen?
I think we're always looking for alternative and varied holiday offerings. A few years ago, this came on our radar, and we were unable to get the rights for it because we're within 100 miles of New York.
Yeah, and not only that, but even for this season, we had actually chosen another play for this slot, and we're proceeding to market that season, and then we found out at the last moment that we could get the rights to A Christmas Story, and so we frantically changed the season, and like I say, we pounced on it.
Quite a good thing to pounce on, especially at this time of year. A lot of people are probably waiting for that time on cable TV when it's going to be on for 24 hours. I know we just have it on and coming and going on the various scenes. But for listeners who may not be familiar with it, what is the basic story of A Christmas Story?
It's the story of a little boy that becomes enamored with the romance of a very particular Christmas gift, which is connected with his fantasy life of the Wild West and Red Rider, and it all comes out of an ad in a magazine, Outdoor Life for Boys, that he sees for a Red Rider BB gun.
Which is not an ordinary BB gun. It has all those things, right?
It's got a compass in the stock and this thing which tells time. You're right.
Who would not want such a gift? Now, it's been transferred from the big screen to the stage. What have you kept? What has the play kept true to the movie? And what, if anything, is new?
The central story, the spine of the story that is told in the film is intact. I think that the adapters of the play did a rather artful job finding what is the difference between the two mediums. There's aspects that are cinematic that just won't work as well on stage, and there's also things that you can do in a theatrical production that are not going to be effective on a film. And they let go of some scenes, not any of the beloved, you know, key seven events, but some of the smaller scenes, you know, for example, it's not easy to bounce over to the department store. And then they also recognize a structure was taking place in the play that had its own voice and created some new scenes as well. New scenes, Miss Shields, the teacher, in a fantasy sequence. I don't want to give anything away, but you've recognized some characters from The Wizard of Oz and so forth.
How did you go about casting it, particularly the kids' roles like Ralphie and Randy Flick and Scott Farkas?
This was a real challenge for us because, of course, we're a university program and a university stage, and we serve our students. But when we found out we had the rights to do it, we spoke, and we realized that this may demand that some of these roles are played by juveniles. And so as we moved towards casting sessions, I saw both the juveniles and our university students for the young people's roles. And my hunch was that we were going to have a Ralphie who was an actual juvenile in order for the pathos to come through, in order for him to tug at our hearts. And then if we had a juvenile Ralphie, we'd have to have a juvenile Randy, his little brother, of course. And then the play introduces a little puppy love with Esther Jane, his classmate. And I thought, well, that can't really be a college student. That really should be an actual juvenile, too.
Anyway, so whatever gets him through the night.
And so we watched this unfold before us, and our hunches were right that you know, our university students auditioned for these roles as well, and we found a wonderful cast of young people, both actual juveniles and younger looking university students that play the friends of the juveniles, that really mesh in a beautiful way. And I think as an ensemble, they it's a synergistic relationship. Where the juvenile actors, I think, are inspired by the professional level that the university students bring to rehearsals, and there's nothing like having that young energy in the rehearsal room to create a character when you're an 18-year-old playing a 9-year-old.
Mm. Well, I can imagine maybe a university student playing Scott Farkas, who is a bigger kid. Is that what happened? Or?
Your instinct is right. Yes, we had the perfect guy come on and play that character. And of course, you know, to a child, the bully is always 18. So that that was not a problem.
He has yellow eyes.
Yeah, he does.
And green teeth.
No, his flaming hair doesn't hurt either.
Well, basically, how is the story presented?
One of the big differences is in the film, of course, we've got the narration, which is a voiceover. In the play, we get to meet and become the guest of Ralph as an adult. And Ralph as an adult is our narrator. But because he's not just a voiceover, he really becomes a much more important part of the storytelling. I would say equal to and as much as our young hero Ralphie, and there's a the playwright also has him stepping into various characters. He'll step into the role of the tree, the Christmas tree lot salesman. He'll step into the role of the delivery man for the leg lamp crate. And there's something that I think is very touching and at times very funny, seeing the older Ralph talk to his younger self on stage, you know, saying, "No, don't do it," you know, as he's looking back on a memory and watching himself make mistakes over again and coaching himself as his younger self.
That's somewhat different. Like you said, in the movie it was a voiceover, and on the radio it was Gene Shepherd on the radio talking, and you couldn't have that dialogue that you were able to stage with Ralphie himself telling the story, and then Ralphie talking to younger Ralphie.
Yes, and it functioned beautifully in the film, and I really think that it was a wonderful stroke of the playwright to have the Ralphie not be a voiceover, but to have an adult Ralph that's on the side of the stage bringing us along. We're his guest, and he's taking us on this journey.
Does he interact with the audience at all while he's in the audience?
He does, in that the audience is there. He has no fourth wall. He is the host of the party. And so although he doesn't engage in any dialogue, although you never know what's going to happen in live theater, he absolutely is working with and off of the audience members as he sees recognition in their eyes of them relating to some childhood experience he's sharing with us as it's being enacted on stage.
So Adult Ralphie played by a university student?
Absolutely, yes. He's played by a very talented university student, and quite artfully, I think, Andrew Goebel. And very interesting too for him to try to find what do those childhood memories mean to a middle-aged man, because those memories become sweeter with time, as we all know who have gotten to middle age.
Not us, right?
Well, with so many classic scenes in so many places, how are places like Ralphie's house, the frozen flagpole, the major award, Santa, and Chinese restaurant transferred from the widescreen to the stage?
I want to talk about this a couple at a time so we can kind of give it some time. So let's begin with the frozen flagpole.
Our scenic designer, Will Newart, he developed the original set that was done in the original stage production, so that we actually have part of the living room slide away, and out comes the recess area from school. Now, in the play, they change it to a lamppost. And it was interesting, in some correspondence with a writer for the Morning Call, I realized, they changed it from flagpole to lamppost, and I wonder why they did that. And, of course, a lamppost is a lot more stage-friendly than a flagpole. Flagpoles tend to be 50 feet and higher. So that's how it happens. Part of the living room slides back, and out of the side slides this area that includes a lamppost. And some of the students are riding in on the wagon with it. Some of the students are meeting the wagon as they cross through the darkness into the light. And it's played out. Light and these wagons and these moving the moving parts of the house all create a magic to weave a cinematic story, an episodic story, as we would say.
So in this case, it doesn't take place near schools, so Ms. Shields doesn't get involved in this?
Oh, she does, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're looking at a recess area, and the very next scene is Where's Flick? Inside the classroom with Ms. Shields, and of course, her response as she sees him out the window.
Flick who?
That's there. Yes, along with the band.
We could actually
tongue.
Probably act this out.
There you go. A Christmas Story, the radio play. There's a new idea.
And the last one, before we take a break, what about the major award?
Mm. Oh, that's absolutely there. And there's a hysterical section, of the husband, much to the wife's horror, giving her direction from the street on where he wants that lamp, which of course is dead center in the front window, and then also the neighbor passing, hey, what's that? It's a major award. Looks like a lamp to me. No, I want it. Tell the whole neighborhood. So that's all there, absolutely. I think everything the audience expects from the film, those classic key scenes, they are all intact in the play.
We're going to talk a little bit more about that. I wanted to ask you about the old man and how that was cast.
Sure. The old man is played by a university actor, a very gifted young comedian. Who can play some character and some age. I think he's doing a wonderful job of he's creating his own old man, but it's absolutely informed by the performance of Darren McGavin from the film, that guy at his wit's end trying to make ends meet.
Yeah, I would agree that particular actor has a really animated voice.
Yes.
We are discussing A Christmas Story, the stage play, which begins at the DeSales University Act One stage on November the 28th, here in the studio with director Stephen Dennis and producer John Bell, and along with my co-host Rosalie Viscomi. And we're going to take a break and talk about some more of the scenes and some more about the play right after these messages.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Touchstone Theater on Bethlehem's South Side presenting Christmas City Follies 13, directed by J.P. Jordan, created and performed by the Touchstone Ensemble. This annual classic, yet again, reimagines what the holidays are all about with music, wit, and holiday hijinks. November 29th to December 22nd. For tickets or information, 610-867-1689 or touchstone.org.
For program support on WDIY, we thank the Bethlehem Historic District Association presenting their 2012 Holiday House Tour event on December 8th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. This year's tour will feature professionally decorated houses, Heckenwelder Place, the Hotel Bethlehem, and Salem Lutheran Church. Tickets are available online at artsquest.com or in person at the Moravian Bookstore or the Bethlehem Visitor Center on Main Street.
Well, leading into the break, you heard the sounds of the infamous Bumpus Hounds. And that would have been really difficult to stage, right?
Yes. Animals and babies are the hardest people to work with.
We drew the line at juveniles.
hard enough, right? Some of the other scenes... Santa's Mountain and the Chinese restaurant, are they included?
Santa's Mountain, absolutely. That's a really key part. That is the master stroke of Ralphie's plan to get this BB gun for Christmas, to go to the Godfather himself, Santa Claus. The Chinese restaurant, it is part of the story, but we don't go there. Which is actually kind of interesting. I don't want this to be controversial, but in 1983, it was a very innocent gag, you know, that Chinese restaurant scene with them trying to sing a Christmas carol, but then unable to pronounce the L sound. But now it's funny because we're looking back at 1983. I'm not so sure that in the context of 2012, it would come across the same. So I actually was kind of glad that there's a reference to everybody get your coats on, we're going to the Chinese restaurant for Peking duck. But that we don't actually go there and use that gag, which is a little bit different today with the stereotype.
The funny thing is that we actually went to a Chinese restaurant on Christmas Day a few years ago, and we mentioned about the movie, and they said, "Oh yeah, rah 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 rah." we're friendly with the owner. We didn't mean to. We just mentioned we had come back from watching the movie, and she started.
If they've got a sense of humor about it, that's cool. I heard of a family that goes and acts out the entire movie at a Chinese restaurant every Christmas.
Outstanding.
Well, are you finding any scenes particularly challenging to stage?
You know, there's some movie magic that's done, for example, in the climactic scene where he actually shoots his BB gun. And it's much easier in a movie to have glasses fly off a face and for them to be stepped on. And then, you know, you simply cut the camera and then you change out the glasses to the broken glasses and you pick them up. So I think, you know, interestingly, it has not been the acting challenges in this. It's been just some of the technical challenges. How do we pull off some of those, create some theater magic tricks, you know, to replicate the cinematic, not so hard illusions.
And do you have a favorite scene or aspect to the story?
You know, I know that the Ralphie coming of age over the course of the story, and part of that is this classmate Esther Jane, who's kind of sweet on him and buys him a Christmas card from his her own allowance. Yeah, and he's confused, but you can see this awakening thing. It's just so endearing to me. But John saw a run through the other night, and I'm wondering.
Yeah, I mean, I think my favorite at this point is an aspect, and it's the aspect of the theatricality. this notion of the scenery changing, flying in, tracking in and off, in and out, to create these spaces that the story can be told in. It's so theatrical, quintessentially theatrical. And as you watch the story, Ralphie's fantasies are so theatrical. So to me, the theatrical staging of the story is only sort of expanding or augmenting this fantasy land of Ralphie's mind. And that's really something I've enjoyed both times I've seen the rehearsals.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've forgotten in the early preparation of the early rehearsals that we call it Ralphie's mindscape, fantasy land where anything and everything can happen. That has been a lot of fun.
And as you say, there is a cinematic magic, but there's also a theatrical magic.
Yes.
So we're telling it with the theatrical magic. And I think all the great fans of this story will enjoy the production as an opportunity to get to experience that.
Yes, a new way to experience the story. Yeah.
Yeah, because you kind of anticipated one of my next question, actually. With so many classic scenes in the movie, how do you deal with audiences anticipating what will happen and then comparing it to what they've seen in the past? But you've already told us about something that they haven't seen in the past.
Yeah.
The love affair.
Yes, and when I watch, these young actors do the performance, I think it'll take about 5 minutes for the audience to just come on over. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just going to come on over to the theatrical experience, and we've had small groups of people, for example, the university students that are going to be the crew backstage, a small army of people that are going to make all that magic happen, come in to watch a run through, and I think that they too are showing how they give over. All those kids know the movie. They grew up with the movie. It was their It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
But they give over. It takes them about 3.5 minutes.
Yeah, and they're on board.
Yeah, they are in for the theater experience.
Well, you talked about them coming over. How can folks get tickets to go over and see A Christmas Story at the Act One main stage at DeSales University beginning on November 28th?
Well, the best way to do that is to contact our box office, and the number is 610-282-3192, or they can go online at desales.edu/act1, and that's the numeral 1.
And they can do that not only for A Christmas Story, but for the other two plays that are coming up, which are A Tale of Two Cities in Chicago, is correct?
That's right. Plays for the spring semester, as well as film festivals, dance concerts, and choral concerts.
Excellent.
I read in the paper there's a talk back on December 2nd. I said, what is a talk back?
A talk back is an opportunity for the audience to meet the cast and the director after the performance and to ask questions about the process that led to what they saw, to give feedback to what they may have enjoyed, to find out about what the plans for these young actors are, where they plan to go after they graduate, and also how certain aspects of the production were created and executed. It's a really good experience, I think, for not only the audience member but for the actors and the director. It's a fun time to talk about the work.
That's excellent as well. It's a unique opportunity. So we're telling you guys out there listening to certainly go see the play. But if you go on December 2nd, you'll have a very unique opportunity to interact with the cast and the staff of the play and learn a lot more than you've learned tonight. We've only had 25 minutes, and we had to cram a lot in. So if you would like to learn more in detail, you can certainly go on December 2nd and participate in the talkback. Did we miss anything?
I think we covered it. I think if you want to come to the talkback and you saw the play earlier, just bring your ticket. Come on in. If we have a seat for you, you can talk back.
Oh, surely. People can come and just participate. You have to. I mean, you wouldn't be able to see the show that Sunday afternoon, but if you wanted to come and then just slip into the talk back, you could do that pretty easily.
Well, that's a good invitation. We're going to be going on November 30th.
Wonderful.
And we talked it up, and we're bringing our neighbors. So.
Oh, great.
Thank you.
That's what we like to hear.
A Christmas Story, the stage play at DeSales University, beginning on November 28th. When does it end?
It plays all the way through December 9th.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank Director Stephen Dennis and Producer John Bell for joining us this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse, and I'd like to thank my co-host, Rosalie Viscomi, as well. Thanks, Rosalie. And at the movies, coming up.